What makes a great hitter is not the bat. What makes a great hitter is their ground force. It's their presence. It's their balance. It's their recognition of the baseball. It's the plan. It's them taking the barrel to the ball. We're all of that. We're not the bat. The rest of the industry is the bat, and we're all the other things within the process. And that's what changes their experience.
All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Today, we had on Mike Bahoon, CEO and founder of Fundraising University, quickly becoming the industry leader in school sports fundraising. They've now raised over $270 million while helping over 2,700 high schools across the country.
Under $100,000 investment, Item 19 is averaging $700,000 a year per location, 26% EBITDA. No employees, no brick and mortar, and break even. You're generating revenue within 60 to 90 days.
It's rare to find a business in franchising that is doing something truly unique like this. Enjoy the episode.
All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
So Mike, what is, as I'm looking into this, I played sports, we traveled, you know, like my family, like we did what we had to do to make it happen. But it almost seems like there's this perfect storm happening right now of 49% of families say that they're struggling to afford youth sports participation costs. And now you have decreased funding. Approximately 63% of public school administrators indicate that school funding for sports has remained flat or is decreasing. What's happening? Is this just no longer a priority? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And it's happening so fast that even myself interacting with the daily, I'm getting my bearings. I think it started with when we went to the youth sports model, right? And we decided to just make everything super expensive. Somehow along the way, we decided we needed 6 hats, 9 jerseys, and we needed to go out of town 15 times. And so the experience, that's become the experience. Well, whether that's necessary or not, like, you know, I've seen the whole process from having him from 8 years old all the way up to Ohio State. And that's, so if you're asking me why, that's what's happening. Like, it's just become this, how do I outspend the other person to, you know, satisfy whatever inadequacies that I have either as a parent or whatever else that is. And so then when you have that, it just works its way up to model into the high school. And so now the expectation is like, what do you mean? We don't have 6 hats and 8 uniforms.
Okay.
You know, you've got a high school budget.
When I was playing, we had a home uniform and away uniform. They were usually dirty and ripped, right? It is what it is. A lot of, you know, they were leftovers. They were passed down from like years before. We all wore the same stuff that, you know, the guys before us wore. So it sounds like it's almost similar to everyone saying they can't afford a house anymore, but everybody wants a 4,000 square foot home. It's like, we can't afford sports, but everybody wants the best equipment, 5 jerseys, 6 different colors, and everyone's keeping up with the Joneses with what all the other teams and leagues are doing.
Yeah, well, then you add the layer onto it that, like in Arizona where I live now, it's open enrollment. So now it becomes a contest to get the kids to come to your school, not the quality and the validity of the coach and not who they are as a human being. But, you know, we ask quite, even when I coached at Ohio State last, I remember one of the kids, we sat down, he was a top recruit, and his parents said, well, we would prefer if Adidas was your sponsor, not Nike. And I just thought, wow, like, what are we talking?
I hate this whole NIL. I don't know how you feel about it. I hate that this is all about sport. I mean, you have some of the best coaches and Nick Saban, all these guys. It's like, it's not about making, you know, high quality young men and teeing them up for success in life. It's just about money now.
Well, let me tell you about, I spent 2 years away from my family in Columbus, Ohio. I had a wonderful experience at Ohio State, wonderful kids, wonderful coaches. And we took over a team that was 20 and 40-ish in 2023. And we had a good season. We kept all the kids. They went 31 and 24. Year two last year, we went to almost all freshmen, right? Because we now had our guys in there. We went 30 and 25. I had an upper 40s RPI. 88% of our innings were played by freshmen. And so we're trending to be exactly what you want to have happen. Right. So we lose in the Big Ten semifinal on a Friday night. Before I got back to Arizona on Sunday, we had lost our 9 best players to the transfer portal.
Wow.
And now that's why I sit here not coaching, because I won't be part of, it's pay to play for kids. and we're teaching them the wrong message. Like, you just, I mean, how would that translate in the business world or fatherhood? Like, I don't like my wife, so I just get another one, or I don't like my job. So, I mean, we're teaching all the wrong things, and it's really kind of sad. I didn't talk to any of those kids along the way as they made the decision. I was very close with, and that's where the advisors fit into this equation. And it's very transactional.
I mean, Cliff, it's kind of how life is nowadays. Everyone has three different jobs, job hopping every 6 months. Like, there's no loyalty in anything anymore.
No.
It's the truth. We look at prospective franchisees. I mean, we look at their history and it's like, man, I feel like you just have to keep lowering your standards, right? You just keep lowering and lowering the bar to then find a baseline. It's like a credit score. It's, you know, it used to be what, 720, 750, and you were considered good.
Right.
Great, yeah. Great was, let's say, 800, and now 650 is the national average. It's like, what? How could being 100 points above bankruptcy be the national average? I mean, it's pathetic. Even we're touring universities now with my son, and they have lower standards of entering the college system if you want to come to the school when most students don't, like, let's say, fall or spring or summer. Sure. It's like, oh, yeah, you only need an 1100 SAT if you want to start school in the summer. Well, what if I want to start school when everyone else does?
Makes no sense.
Right. It makes no sense. Exactly. Because it's a fucking business. It's all a business.
You know, you're exactly right. I'll be honest with you. I have a 15-year-old named Faith. And, you know, she came, and I'm an advocate of school, right? I was an inner city kid that if I didn't have school and if I didn't have coaches, it would have been ugly, right? I would have been on American Greed or something instead of what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm not joking. I would have been the best at something. It would have probably been the bad thing. And so I believe in all that, right? And she came to me in a very intelligent, educated way and wanted to have a conversation about not going to school and learning online, working out at more advantageous times, and wanting to go out and get work experience to become a business owner. And I just went, I got nothing for it. And that's sad.
Wow. You were supposed to say, whoa, pump the brakes. Do you realize that if you don't get a college degree, what the unintended consequence of your life will be? Right? Nope. Yeah. You have no response. You're speechless. Like, how do you argue with that level of intelligence in this is the direction I'm considering going in as I meet that fork in the road? I could, oh, by the way, Dad, I could go get $150,000, $200,000 in student loans, or I could double down on myself in this business and probably become a millionaire way faster.
Yeah. Or even as a father who, you know, as a steward thought, well, I saved all this money and put it away for her to go to college and I could pay for college, but it's like, oh, to your point, I mean, she'd be way better off just starting a business at 18 with that money.
Totally. I'm in the same mind. You said 16? Faith is 16?
15. Yeah.
My son Chase is 16 years old. We're having the same conversations. And of course, he listens to this guy, Ramsey, sometimes. And a guy called in, you know, with like $400,000 in debt. And, you know, that Dave Ramsey guy is like, wait a minute. You have $250,000 in student loan debt? And the guy's like, yeah, aren't you a police officer? Yeah. Like, how did that happen? The guy's a cop. I mean, my dad's a cop. I love our police, but you don't need $250,000 in debt to become a criminal justice degree. Wow. This guy is a disaster. This whole story was just crazy. You listen to some of these. If you listen in on some of these callers, like, we're blessed. Like, if you listen to some of these callers, we are absolutely blessed.
Oh, my God.
I know. Look, I want to dig in on the brand. And I met you, actually, if you remember, at the Diplomat.
I do.
I was the last guy out of the room, if you remember. I'm like, I got to meet this guy. And it was a good interaction. You can see when the light bulb goes off and you can see when the broker is completely disconnected from what was just told to them, right? And I saw a glazing effect on most brokers that really don't understand what you do. Mike, we need to make sure these are brokers in the industry that understand this business and they don't even know what you do. We have to make sure that the listener has a clear conceptual understanding of what you do, how you do it, and why they should consider it. Because we talk about asymmetrical investments all day long on the show. This is an asymmetrical investment. This has a ton of upside. It has the legacy piece, the feel-good piece. It has the sports piece. I mean, there is so much to your brand, and I do believe that there is somewhere along the road, there's like a disconnect with our profession. And if our profession doesn't get it, I guarantee you that the prospective franchisee will never get it.
We have to be able to explain it.
That's right. Yeah. We No, and I've always said this my whole career, no one can get more excited about the brand than the broker. We present it. We set the tone. We set the energy level. We set the expectation. And then, of course, we hand them over to you, right, to close the loop on due diligence and have them nodding their head yes, saying, I'm so glad I met you guys and you introduced me to something amazing like this. Mike, what is, right, Fundraising University? What is it?
You couldn't be more right. We're ready to break out and help millions of kids everywhere. And it starts today and it continues to build. So I actually unconsciously started this as probably a 10 or 11 year old. I was the inner city kid, you know, needed everything that athletics brought, right? The structure, the discipline, the competitiveness, the teamwork. And so, I mean, I guess the brand kind of started then as far as the heart of the brand. And then along the way, you know, I just continued on through that passion of sports, but it was really what sports involved really than the actual sport. And it took me probably till a 50-year-old man to realize, hey, I don't love baseball. I love the interaction of what this does. I love how it helps me grow. And so I had a chance to do all three in college, decided to play college baseball, played professional baseball. And then in 1999, I went back to my high school and thought now that that part was done, I would coach. And I met a gentleman that became my mentor, and he showed me as an independent contractor how I could raise money for this inner city school so we could just have jerseys. I mean, we didn't have jerseys. And so I did that and just incrementally supported him. And then I got to a point where I met my wife. I've been married for 20 years in 2000, and I was coaching Division I baseball at Creighton University. And I was like, how do I take sports and make it so I can make money? If I'm not going to be an athlete, I'm not going to be a high-level coach, I'm not going to be an agent, which is less than 1%. Is there something for all the rest of us who love that you can actually do something transformationally and transactionally, right? And so I just always had that in my heart. And so, you know, this started to kind of materialize over time, and we started to get some traction. And then in 2016, I went and got a doctorate in entrepreneur finance, and he presented the idea of the franchise system. I had never thought about it. I didn't have the resources for it to be anything other than what it was at that point. There was 10 of us. We were sole proprietors, and I was a sales manager. That's what I was, over people that I knew that went into high schools. And then through this Christian organization, the C12, I had exposure to 40 some franchisors and over 300 franchisees. I met a man who helped me put together the mechanics of it, the FDD, the ops thing. So we did that till 2020. Then we launched in March of 2020. We sold 16 units the first month, and then COVID came. And we were shut down for a year. Speeding that up and going forward, now here we sit today. We're doing very well. We're getting traction, and we're very healthy and super blessed to do it. What Fundraising University is, and why it's kind of evasive to explain exactly like you said, is we're shifting the paradigm of what school sports fundraising is, and we're building our own category. Most people see fundraising as I give you candy bars, you sell them, we come back. Fundraising is not a product or a commodity. It's a service-based business. And so that's what we've done that's unique, is we come in and we service in a very consultative way and expertise, just like you all do. And we come in and we shift the paradigm with coaches and athletic departments by bringing in a very technical way where we bring very specific dynamics to the athletics, to the activity groups. And we do two things, right? We give them back time, and we're going to raise $500 per kid. And so that's what Fundraising University does, is it goes into schools, it pinpoints an athletic program. You know, you've got a $3,000 budget for a coach who needs $15,000. Now it's his job to figure that out along with everything else. And we come in and raise them 20 to 25, and we improve that experience for kids all over the country. So that's what we do.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710. Or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Give us the specifics of what you did that obviously you're very proud of it. I could hear the passion. What did you do recently so that we understand clearly?
Castile High School in Arizona, we did a 1 week fundraiser that was about 3 hours of the kids' time. We raised them $55,000. In those 3 hours by deploying those dynamics and executing on our service-based system, which is going to you know, transform their field, their resources on every level. That's what we're capable of doing in a short period of time, is building wealth into athletic programs, which that's neat. I like giving them money, but what I like the most is the net effect of that is there's some kid like I was that's going to be more connected to sports because there's resources to be there. And that's an example.
Mike, I've heard of the candy bar thing. I've paid ungodly amounts of money for the fun runs. And nowadays you can easily set up a GoFundMe page. Like, what are you guys doing? Is it one of those things? What does a one-week fundraiser look like?
So there's three types of products that kind of work through. Again, picture it as a service-based business. So there's donations, like you mentioned. We do texting in 1 hour. And then there's consumable products. We actually ship them to home versus the school. And then we have digital discount products. So they're merchant-based products. What's unique about that for us on the product side, and then I'm going to separate from that, is we have our own custom ERP. So we build our own products inside of technology, and they're all digital. And so we're delivering them in a digital way through the school. Let me use the GoFundMe as an example. I think this will really drill into what we do that's different. If you were a coach, you know, Justin, you went back and coached at your high school and you wanted to raise money and you said, you know, I'll do the GoFundMe. That makes a lot of sense. We can email people, right? You're going to do that and you're going to probably make $100 per kid, 40 kids, $4,000. With us, from the time they meet with us, we're going to have very specific meetings that are going to bring in those dynamics that I talked about and shift the paradigm as the ultimate goal. So I'm going to meet with the coach one-on-one. We're going to identify expectations and goals. We're going to create urgency. We're going to develop leadership. And so what we're doing is we're bringing in those concepts of athletics and we're moving those dynamics into part of that activity so that we could use those dynamics of sports to increase their ability to raise more money in a very intentional way. You could go up in front of the parents at the meeting, Justin, you could say, hey, I want everybody's help. Here's these sheets, go do it, good luck. Or you could stand up there in front of each kid and talk about why are we raising money? What do we do? What are our tools? How does it affect our program? And then you can have a system that actually not only holds them accountable, but we can measure and influence results. And so we're typically going to raise them 500 more times than they could raise on their own. And we're going to do it in much faster time. What makes a great hitter is not the bat. What makes a great hitter is their ground force. It's their presence. It's their balance. It's their recognition of the baseball. It's the plan. It's them taking the barrel to the ball. We're all of that. We're not the bat. The rest of the industry is the bat. And we're all the other things within the process. And that's what changes their experience.
All right. I still have questions. I want to get a little more granular. So
love it.
Can you take the 55,000 and can we break it down? Like X percent will come from these digital products. X percent will come from this mass texting campaign. And are we texting just residents of the area of Arizona that would benefit from a better sport program that want to support the school?
Yeah, great question. So we're only doing donations in this case, and we only did it for 1 hour. I hand them a sheet. I coach them through the best 30 people to reach out to. They go inside of our technology. They get a link. They share a custom invitation for them to support their team from the link. And then in that 1 hour, we contact all those 30 people. And that's the conclusion of the fundraiser. And so it's about setting the right expectations, right? Because we know that our math tells us if we ask 30 people, that 10 people are going to say yes, and they average $63 per donation. So we're going to raise $630 per kid. And in that case, they had about 74 kids. We performed a little higher. And so it's coming in and then organizing it, asking in the most efficient way through technology, and then creating the urgency and the teamwork concept. Because in that hour, we have drafted them into teams, and those teams are competing against each other to outperform one another.
Okay. So now not only is the coach involved, but now all the student athletes are involved. Every one of them is participating in the fundraiser. $55,000 in that short period of time is remarkable.
Significant.
That's a lot of money. Give me the split. What I'm hearing now is we're not going door to door selling candy or wallpaper and actual physical commodity products. That's what I'm not hearing.
So they're going to make, there's no upfront cost. There's no minimums. We share in the revenue. So 70% is going to go to the team. And then 30% is going to be on the side of our owner.
So in this case, your Arizona franchisee made a little over $15,000 in a, not even a week, measured in hours. Give me the time commitment for that 15 grand.
So we had a 30-minute meeting when we established the agreement. Then I had another 30-minute meeting where I isolated the head coach because I needed him or her to shift the paradigm that they were in control and leading the activity. Then we met with the players for 1 hour and executed. So they had about 2 hours into the event.
Holy crap. You know, when you think about, like, we represent STEM brands, right? So let's just use STEM. We had musicology on the show. We've had art on the show. They'll approach the aftercare coordinator. They'll approach the principal. They'll get us some wins. They'll get some rejections. We already have it. Who is saying no to this? What coach in America, what public school is saying, no, I'm not interested in bridging the gap of my budget between $3,000 of actual cash and a $15,000 need? Like, who says no? Like, what's the closing ratio of you approaching a coach saying, I want to do this?
Yeah, so far through our ERP, I just looked at it today for some recruiting. We close on a one call close at 36%. The other people who don't do it are either, number one, they may have something. Maybe the parents do a golf tournament. They're uncomfortable with the idea. Or unfortunately, there's about a third of them that they're so overworked. The idea of adding something, they're just not even listening to us yet. Like, here's something else to do. And I shut down and then maybe I do the baseball team and then they're like, oh, then they come back the next year. What we're facilitating is exactly what you're saying. We're facilitating a process through technology. Someone is saying to Justin in a very personal way, would you help and support me? And people love to do that for kids.
Yes. So am I going after the athletic director who oversees every sports program? And it's like, yeah, I'm going to make an introduction to every coach because they're all going to need this.
We call on the individual coaches directly. And okay. The reason why is that if the coach does not lead the activity, then the athletes will not respond the same way. Even though I've coached for 30 years, they could care less. And you guys have probably seen it as parents. You know, you might be telling Cliff, your son, to do this or that. And then someone else tells them the same thing, let alone their coach. And so when coach says, here's what we're doing and why, even though I'm fostering what he's going to say and how to say it, it's completely different. And the athletic director, they have their own process singularly that the coach abides by, but our customer is the coach. Or, you know, we do work with bands, choirs, ROTC, all the activity groups too.
The revenue split is super healthy. I'm not going there. Like, what I do, I'm masterful at. You need to trust the process. We have the technology. It's like, I'm not going to open up my Komodo on a podcast and tell you exactly how I got 55. I mean, I get it. I wouldn't either.
Cliff, for an $80,000 franchise fee, you learn the secret sauce.
That's right. He laughs. It's true. It's like, listen, if you want to know how I do this, this has been decades in the making of how to run an effective fundraise. Man, you're very limited output. You're recruiting your team. Your labor is free. It could be 70 students. Can you imagine the size of it? If you extrapolate, as they said, in 2024, let's call them employees instead of students, right? In 2024, how many employee/student athletes did you have on payroll that were pushing the fundraiser? You got to talk about thousands. Yeah, you're basically an organization.
Typical territory has about 3,300 students at some point that will be going out and speaking to 30 people or more.
Right.
Are most of your franchisees solopreneurs? Or do they have like a team of salespeople out there banging on doors for them?
What's really neat about that is we genuinely have a split right down the middle. Like right now we are one more heavy on an investor type, right? Which is the person who has reps. So we have owner operator, and that typically is someone who really is passionate about sports and has done some level of sales. It's kind of their combination. And then we have these wonderful entrepreneurs that are executives that see that, hey, I can bring someone in. We train really well on the sales part, and we have a 90-day fast track program, and we get executives all the time that'll come in and buy a 3-pack. They trust our system because we're with them the first 90 days. And there's, you know, I've got 10 territories of my own that I do that where I could pay a sales rep 15%. They can make $100,000 and they're still 10% revenue for the investor.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, they only have to do about 700,000 in sales. That's our median number for our territories for this year. It's going to be about 720 with our territories open this year.
This is the brand that you see as a broker consultant, Justin, and you cruise over it real quick because you just don't think it could generate enough revenue for your 6-figure client.
I've been cruising for years.
And that's why I said when I met him in a diplomat, I'm like, wait a minute, man, this is 7 figures. Like you have multiple people doing over 1 million. I mean, this is a non-brick-and-mortar brand. This is an under 100 grand brand.
Something really cool, Cliff, I'll only share because you're the superstar that you are. But we right now have ran 2,512 teams and our residual rate is 92.7 on those same teams.
Wow.
92. So if you do 700,000 the next year, you just add 10 or 12 teams and you're at 850. And we've had seven teams this year where we've raised over $100,000 for one football team.
So the football team, 92.7% of them are coming back the next season to do it again because they see the benefit.
Not only the next season, we're at the end of the fundraiser, we're renewing them on the spot for a year ahead.
Yeah, now we're like, all right, now I get it. Now I trust you. I see the power of it. The budget's not going to change.
Isn't the field hockey and lacrosse coach seeing the success also and saying, I want some of this?
Totally.
Perfect. And that's exactly right. So Justin, you're the head football coach. I run your fundraiser. Cliff is the basketball coach. You're going to come up to me at the end of the fundraiser and say, what do you have for me?
That's right.
And that's why we have eight products because we can run up to 15 fundraisers in one school. In Indiana, at Brownsburg High School, we raise over $400,000 at one school.
Right. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Should the former IT guy, software engineer who happens to love sports be looking at this business or no? You're not going to deal with objection, nuts and nose, sales banging on doors, relationship building.
He should say yes and buy multiples and because he's going to love our technology and he's going to love the visibility to the sales rep and he's going to love the way that we manage KPIs. It's funny you say that. We just brought in a gentleman that exactly fit that profile in Dallas was our last owner. And the executive technology operations, non-sports people that want to do good, they still have a heart too and they want to help kids. You don't have to be a coach. They love this model because there is a very responsible transactional piece to it and they plug right into it. And honestly, that's a part we've underestimated originally. We were just so sports heavy. We needed to cast a much larger net to people that could do this. And we're starting to see that now. The majority of our leads that we've gotten in the last 90 days are more of the investor, you know, semi, I hate that word. So I call it investor model. That's the majority of what we're getting because it just makes sense. You can come in as an executive. If I'm an executive and I make $400,000 and you don't own a business just for taxation, like there's something wrong with you. Right? Where you can come into this and have multiple territories. And because of the ERP, we actually have it down to where they're spending 4 to 6 hours a week managing their rep is the maximum.
For the audience, what is the definition of an ERP system?
It's an enterprise rep management system. And so essentially, most people know what a CRM is. So it's the customer management. Ours is that it has, so just imagine I contracted a group. So I've got the legal. It goes into QuickBooks. I do the projection. I go back and market to that person. I capture the agreement. It does everything from inception to end, all inside of it. And it's kept track of them digitally so they can see anything that they've done over a historical period of time.
And it's proprietary. You built it. Nice.
So we put seven figures with 36 months.
Good for you, Mike. Justin, you realize this is one of the biggest, you know, we always talk about market cap. And now, yes, it's a small brand and it's an under $100,000 investment. What people don't understand is this is one of the biggest market cap opportunities that we had on the show. Think about that. Just take a guess at the market cap of charitable giving in the United States.
For youth sports or overall charitable giving?
No, I'm talking about, because that's what he's in, right? He's in the charitable giving, which is youth sports. But still charitable. People are giving money to kids they probably don't even know. I do it. You did it. How many candy bars you buy? You don't know where that money went.
Does it start with a B or a T?
Guess.
$400 billion.
Close. $557 billion. This is a $557 billion market that Mike is in. And Mike just wants a piece. A little piece for helmets, pom-poms, lacrosse sticks, baseball bats, like shoulder pads. This is unbelievable. And travel, airline tickets. It's all in there. It's like, we need a bus. We got to rent the bus. We got approved to go to this trip. We don't have the money. It's unreal. This is the best part that relates to Mike and Mike's business. Out of the $557 billion, $374 billion of it comes from people, not companies, not foundations, not bequests. I was shocked to see the bequests was only $42 billion. That's it. I thought it was going to be more than that. There are 1.8 million recognized 501Cs in this country, 1.8 million of them. Have you ever heard of United Way? Have you ever heard of Feeding America? Have you ever heard of Salvation Army? How about American Red Cross? I heard all of them. That right there is what? That's about $20 billion right there in annual donations from people. $20 billion. The largest charitable foundation in the United States is a name I've never heard of, a company called Fidelity Charitable. They bring in $10 billion a year in donations, and I've never heard of this company in my life.
And what do they do with it?
Exactly. They're a donor-advised fund that facilitates charitable giving.
They're paying
by managing by managing donor contributions.
The way you're explaining that, it's like I've just never looked at it that large. So you're teaching me to that.
You're in a 500 billion, but I'll take it even further now. Now Justin said, but that's the whole world. Let's break it down. There are 98,577 public schools in this country. That's elementary, that's middle, that's high schools. That blows my mind. And then if you look at secondary school enrollments, you're talking about 49 million students. This is your market. It's like, I don't know. Why would I want to do this? Do you want to be in a $500 billion industry with 50 million students? Yeah, but they're not all athletes. Right. 8 million, just 8 million alone are high school only athletes. 8 million. These are startling statistics for a business, I'm sorry, that's under $100,000 investment. It's interesting.
I just need to shut up and let you keep going. That's the last thing I could do. Yeah.
Well, no, but I see what we don't, like, that's different. Like, I could get that data, right? Now it's like, well, wait a minute. Like that, let's call that a top-down approach to a business. Hey, Justin, let's start. What are big? Transportation's big. Transportation has a T in it, right? It's a $1 trillion industry. Well, this is a $500 billion business. Okay, and then Justin and I go, all right, let's start with that. Now what? Now we meet Mike. In comes Mike in this $500 billion business. What does Mike do? Well, I just focus on the youth sports piece. Okay, well, how do we do that? And then you're sharing it with the audience. I think it's great. I like the model. I know there's proprietary pieces you can't share. Is there an item 19 so that we can understand average unit economics of a franchisee?
Absolutely.
Talk to us about the item 19 financials you're willing to provide on the show.
Yeah, I mean, we're trending right now at about $711,000 per territory for this year, and we're trending right at about a 26.2% EBITDA.
That's franchisees' revenue.
Right. Correct. We've got 13 people that do over $1 million in gross sales. We've had 5 do that the first year, and we have one person that may do $2 million this year. And those are one person running one territory, no employee.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Mike, are you seeing, is an affluent market not needing as much money as a lower income? Like, what do you see or does it not matter demographically?
You know, my answer is going to surprise you at first, and then it's going to make sense. The number one pre-indicator of a successful fundraiser is actually the coach themselves. Because if they buy into our system and they deploy those dynamics, then the kids and the people will follow. And that they'll follow that more at an inner city school than an affluent school. Now, obviously, if you take an affluent school and proper leadership, they're going to outperform them. But you take an inner city coach that can motivate 100 kids, they're going to do that at a higher level than an affluent school where he doesn't have the right leadership.
So it works anywhere.
Events are 10 to 12 weeks. They require all these volunteers, all this coordinating, and their EBITDA's got to be, if it's half of ours, I'm shocked.
They have a lot of employees. It's a heavy lift. I've been part of it because I like you, we had children in the schools. Yeah. We've been through all this stuff. We've cut all these checks. I paid for him going around the track and his friends and marking their back like a bingo card.
That's sweet.
That's right. As a
business model, though, if you have a kid in the family asking all the family members for money, like if you don't donate, like who are you? Yeah.
You're an asshole.
If you ask 30 people, 10 will say yes.
Wow. That's it?
All right. Right.
Everyone has 20 S's in the family.
Well, you're still relying on teenagers to come up with the list.
Oh, okay. I was talking about adults. Yeah. You reach out to an uncle. It's like, hey, I need, you know.
Right. I figure number one on the list is the rich uncle.
Yeah. If they put a good effort into the list, then yeah, we'll get 70% of the people can say yes.
The item 19 is impressive. There are brick and mortar brands that don't have average revenue of $500,000, let alone 700 plus thousand. There are brands, brick and mortar, non-brick and mortar, that are not running a 26% EBITDA. Is that what I heard? I mean, come on. That's impressive. So what did I learn doing some research? I want to share with you. Maybe you could tell us a little bit. Oh, you have this sell, set up, and execute as your three main buckets, right? What exactly do you mean by that? We have the sell, the setup, and the execution. What is that time frame?
So that would be the week. So that's kind of what we do our basis on, is we're going to run the entire process from beginning to end. So We're going to bring the sale to them. We're going to go through the setup, and then we're going to execute all that very specifically in 1 week. And it's got those five dynamics that I keep mentioning are used during that 1 week period of time. That's the secret sauce that you mentioned. And it's a little, and I'm not trying to be evasive to it. I'll use another baseball analogy. Like, you know, if we all showed up to the ballpark and we were watching two teams play catch on the other foul line, like everybody would just look at that and say, well, they're both playing catch, right? Once you get inside of that and there's actual visceral things that are created with the way that the coach approaches the athletes to get them to respond, and you take those little intrinsic parts and you get those athletes to buy in, whether that's just an understanding that, hey, we want these things, we want jerseys, or the really good coach or teacher will get them to understand, like, we need these things for safety or just to generally be able to play a baseball game. Like, I'll give you an example. I was in Atlanta. This was like 2005, and I go to leave, and this lady, you know, we're in their tougher neighborhood there. So like around this Tucker High School, and I go to leave, and this lady comes up to me. She says, hey, can I talk to you? She told me, she said, you know, I'm a single parent. I work two jobs, and it's a play-to-play model in Atlanta. And if my son didn't sell these 25 cards, he wasn't going to be able, we weren't going to be able to pay to play football. And now from 3 to 6 o'clock every night, I don't have to worry about where he's going to be at.
Nice. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fear here. We're going to a pay-to-play model, and that's in some areas, and that's scary because that will just inherently, people will not participate in sports. And then what are the problems that spawn off of that? It's not good.
In those neighborhoods, it's the difference between a life on the streets and a life of just structure and discipline and going to a better school. And I mean, that's a serious impact.
Mike, are you registered in California? We need brands for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have an owner that has two northern territories around Sacramento and then goes over to Reno, and then the other 30 some locations are open.
Okay, so just so you know, in IFPG, it says you're not registered in Hawaii, Washington, Wisconsin, California, Utah, and Maryland.
Yeah, I think the Washington and California were big emphasis of the last 90 days, and I'd have to look directly, but I think that's been cleaned up between now and then. That's
why Utah? News. Utah's not even a registration state.
Sold out.
Oh, is it Nebraska sold out? Where you took that state?
That's where I started, and then I went to Kansas City, but I've just moved to Gilbert, Arizona to set up our home office 15 months ago.
Okay.
What's the 5-year plan here?
So we think that in a responsible way, we'll add about 40 a year for the next 5 years, and then we'll continue to average 700 a territory, and we feel like we'll get to 140 to 150 million and probably have a $8 to $9 million EBITDA with the service-based model with technology inside of it with the high residual.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, you're going to get gobbled up by PE firm. Absolutely. This is right in their wheelhouse.
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned that. It reminded me of something, Cliff, that you're teaching me about today, and just kind of the more macro way to look at it is I had a PE guy show up in our office, and I was just joking around because I had another friend that was a franchisor over a big brand, and he was in the other room. And I said, why are you talking to me and you're not over there with them? They have like 3,000 units. And he said, you're building your own category. And the reality of your category is most people never get past $10 million because for the founders, it's just the passion brand. They're not real business owners. And now that you've gotten over that 25 to 30 million range and you've got traction, like there will be nothing like what you have. And that's what we're interested in.
There are, when you look at the world of 4,000 brands and franchising, Mike, there are so few unique category creators compared to all the copycat brands, right? What do you do? Oh, painting company, right? Cleaning company, right?
As far as garage floors.
And listen, yeah. They do well. But for people who are, that's why we love the home stretch, the spray net, right? Brands that are actually doing something different. And for the typical investor, something like this, it's low risk, right? So it's not like, oh my God, this is brand new and I don't know if it's going to work. We know the demand is there. The investment's super low, just asymmetrical risk reward. Again, this is just education, helping, getting it out there and helping people understand it.
That's right. You make a good point. Like our biggest challenge going back to where Cliff started in the beginning of it, you know, if five brands are shown and you show garage doors and painting and all that, you know, you've consumed that and then you say fundraising you and everybody's scratching their head. That's our biggest challenge. And so we've really hunkered down that learning curve. The story that we're producing, the marketing person that we brought in, like we've tripled up and gotten three marketing firms to actually work together that are competitors, kind of like a Shark Tank deal. And I got them to work together and we're marching that out right now and just making sure we get out the most clear, concise story of who we are. And I need to do a great job of marketing it to the right people as well. And growing to the places that we have has tested my growth on a lot of levels. And I think we've learned those things and we're seeing some traction on kind of this next wave. And honestly, I can see why a lot of brands don't get past the point that we're at. They just don't have the wherewithal. And I think the reality that we can see that and apply those learnings, I think is going to be just a whole new trajectory for us.
I will say, I listened to you on a podcast. I think that you recorded a few years ago. And the way you described your brand and what you do today was much more clear and concise than it was. So I don't know if you refined how you present the brand, because that matters. But yeah, I think it does make a big difference.
Yeah, we've gotten some coaching and some help, and it's just, I didn't realize what a challenge it was. I mean, it really is. And now that we've recognized the challenge, that's when the lid, you can kind of feel coming off of it now because of that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Cool.
Yep. People are getting it home-based, no lease, no PG risk.
And fast, the ongoing cost.
Car-based, Mike, right? Car-based.
Yeah, that's right. If you're at home, you're in trouble.
That's right.
What do you do? You own a McDonald's. What are you doing flipping the burgers? Go open another one.
Yeah, this is strong. Justin, we touched on everything.
I like this model. Take us home. Go ahead. Give us your parting words.
Take us home. I think it's home-based, no lease, no PG risk. Fast, it's my favorite line to say on the call. Short ramp to break even. Super short. Collapse time, short ramp, break even, stop the bleeding, get some wins on the board, and you're off to profitability. And done right and following the model, I think you could do well even in the first 12 months. Owner-operator model, 0 to 1 employees in the beginning, and then you scale it. So you don't have a heavy burn rate. According to Mike, you have phenomenal first-class support from the franchisor, obviously proprietary systems. An EBITDA number of 26% per territory, I think, is enviable. They're a disruptor, which means it's not a crowded space, industry leader in this category. Mike seems to have stacked the deck with a lot of really smart people. If you look at the deck he created for an organization that's young, you have quite a few people on payroll that have fundraising experience, sports experience, just talented people, including you. The tone is set at the top, right? Yeah, I think that I love the recurrence. He calls it residual for the audience to be consistent with the language we constantly use. This is a built-in recurring revenue model. Everyone's dream is to do a deal and beg for referrals. You don't have to beg for shit. When I do a deal with the coach in the locker room for football, I'll have 5 other coaches saying, it would be irresponsible of me to not do this deal.
Right.
It'd be irresponsible to me. What's my excuse? It's too much risk. What risk? I just did it. It was successful. Right. I just gave you guys 70 cents on the dollar. What risk? It's because you're fat and lazy that you don't want to do it.
I love it.
The football team just got a new stadium and the soccer team is running around barefoot.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. He doesn't like the word semi-absentee, but it is a semi-absentee model because if the engineer gets involved, he's going to hire his extroverted sales guy to close deals and get out there. So look, I like this for a lot of reasons. People listen to the show. It's not for everyone. Talk to Justin and I. Let's see if there's fit.
Got to be fit.
Got to be a fit for Mike's culture, and you got to fit in both cultures. So as we say, it's a mutual evaluation process. Mike's going to be looking at you, and you're looking at Mike and his organization. But I like it. I'm really glad you're on the show. I think this would be a strong episode, and I think a lot of people will take kindly to it. Thanks for coming on, man. Great seeing you again.
Mike, I just want to make sure we're not using false earnings claims here. We keep using the number 26% net. Is that in the FDD?
It will be in this what's trending this year inside our ERP, which is digitally keeping track of it.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's build this thing. Thanks for coming on.
Love it.
Thank you. I learned a lot today. Thank you.
So did we. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Love what you hear on the Pursuit of Profit podcast? Show your support by subscribing, rating, and leaving a review. Thank you for being a part of our journey.